We have been learning in Proverbs how to make wise decisions. And last time we talked about avoiding adultery because it's a major theme in Proverbs. And this time we're going to talk about something very similar, and that is money. You may not think that's similar, but it is, because the root cause of the misuse of sex is the same sin as the root cause of most misuses of money, and that is covetousness. Or another word for that is greed. So that's studying all about what the Proverbs says about money. It really divides into two topics. It talks about your attitude towards money and your actions regarding money. And so that's our outline this morning, your attitude and your actions. But it's essential that we talk first about the attitude, because if you don't have a firm grasp on your proper attitude towards money should be, you will never have the proper action with regard to money. It's impossible. So attitude is crucial. Proverbs 15:27. The greedy man brings trouble to his family. First thing we learn about our attitude towards money is you should not be greedy. Instead, you should be content. Say, well, what is greed? What is greed, anyway? The term is used a lot, but it's little understood. I think there's a lot of different definitions to it. Is greed just wanting money? Is it wrong to want something? No, the Bible talks about Jesus wanting things. Some people say, well, greed is wanting a lot of money. But, that's a little arbitrary. What's a lot of money? Besides, what's wrong with wanting a lot of money? Don't you want a lot of money? If someone came up to me on the street, real rich guy who is wanting to give away some money, and he said, hey, Daryl, here's a lot of money. Do you want it? I would say, sure. Does that make me greedy? I don't think it's wrong to want something. And where would you draw the line? The issue is how much. How much money should you not want? Is it okay to want $100? Remember what we said last time at the definition of covetousness? Covetousness is what? Desire minus contentment. Good. Desire minus contentment. When you want something and you're not content without it, that is, you're demanding it from God, then that's covetousness, that's greed. You have a choice what you want to think about all day long. God has given you control over your mind. And you can determine what you want to think about. And what you set your mind on determines the way your life goes. We chastise children at Christmas time who get a whole bunch of presents and then sit around and complain and gripe about what they didn't get. Your children do that, and what do? You teach them. You sit down and say, listen, you need to learn to be thankful. You need to focus on what you did get. And we teach our children that, but we do the same thing. God just showers us with countless blessings, and we zero in on our neighbor's truck, or something that he's got that we want and that we don't have. So, the Bible teaches that we should be content. It's a command in the Bible. It's a command in Proverbs. We ought not to be greedy. The opposite of greed is contentment. Proverbs 30:15 says, the leech has two daughters. Give, give, they cry, and they're never satisfied. This is the definition of greed. Inability to be satisfied. It's not wrong to become rich, but it's wrong to have riches as a goal in life. So never make riches as your goal. Proverbs 28:20 says, the faithful man will be richly blessed, but the one eager to get rich will not go unpunished. Don't be eager to get rich. Because greed, and this is crucial, greed is a mark of ingratitude. It's a slap in the face to God. It's a refusal to recognize the kindness of God. We talked about the goodness of God before, the word tov, remember, God's goodness. God's kindness is when God takes his goodness and shoots it at you with a laser beam and makes a direct hit. That's God's kindness, when he applies his goodness to you. And every person on the planet has personally experienced the kindness of God. I'm going to say that again. Every single person on the planet has personally experienced the kindness of God and will continue to experience it with every breath they take. Has God been kind to you? I'd like to have a job someday where I would counsel people who are angry with God and can't forgive him. You've heard of that. People say, I'm mad at God, I can't forgive him, I'm furious with him. Because he hasn't been good. If I had that job, then I would have those people come to my office and I'd say, come on in, and let me just give you this little form to fill out just so I can assess your situation a little bit, and you fill out the instance on the form, and then come on in, we'll do our counseling. And the form would read like this. And go ahead and find it, like an empty spot on your outline or on your song sheet or something, and just jot down the answers to these questions so you can assess whether or not you're a good candidate for the kindness of God. Number one, how many arms do you have? Number two, how many legs do you have? Three, who gave you life? Number four, list each time God has caused your heart to beat. And it's supposed to be properly footnoted with a comprehensive list of all the benefits that was, by the way. Okay, list each time He has given you a breath of air in your lifetime. Now that should settle it, but there's more. Keep going. How many drinks of water has He given you in your life? How many bites of food? How many nights have you spent sheltered because you have some shelter? List each item of clothing you've ever had and put an asterisk next to each one that has fit properly. Please note that you, please note if you have had to live on a planet that is either too far away from the sun or too close to the sun. And also make a note at the bottom of this page if you've ever had any difficulty with flying off of the earth at 1,000 miles an hour because God failed to maintain gravity. How many moments have you been free from severe eye pain in your life? How many days have you not had an ear infection? Has He blessed you with sight, smell, taste, ability to feel, hear? Can you walk? Are you deformed? Can you use your thumb? Use your memory? Attach to the paper a comprehensive list of all the body parts God has given you. You only have to go down to the cellular level, that's all. And a separate list of each one that works. And make a note of each thought God has allowed you to have. Give a brief description of every injury or illness that you've not had because God protected you from it. List each time you've experienced pleasure in your lifetime. And put them in, itemize the categories. How many times you've experienced pleasant taste, pleasant smell, pleasant feeling, pleasant sight, pleasant thought, pleasant emotion. And has God ever given you any money or any possessions? Yes or no? Has He ever granted you any responsibility? Provide a list of each time God has caused the sun to rise in the morning, protected you with the atmosphere. List any raindrops or snowflakes that have benefited you, either directly or indirectly. When you came into the world, did God provide someone to take care of you? Please state each thing that caretaker ever did for you. And list how many people God has given you to love. Describe anything that God has revealed to you via creation, as well as including a summary of any written revelation He's given. With God, a day is like 1,000 years. How many days has God ever waited during your lifetime for you to repent of something? Has God given you an opportunity to know Him? Has He provided forgiveness for your sins? And please list each sin and put a star beside next to each one that you didn't deserve forgiveness for. Did He die for you? Did He love you before you loved Him? Has He promised you anything? Okay, now, step into my office and tell me about your troubles. Tell me that God isn't kind to you and that He hasn't shown you kindness. Pretty rough. I don't think if I took that approach I would have very many clients. Because it's pretty rough to complain about God not showing us kindness when you focus your thoughts on what He has given you. It's easy to complain if you focus your thoughts on what He hasn't given you because there's so much that you can always think of. But what we did in this test just now is basically what we should be doing all the time. And that is focusing our attention on what God has given. And that will bring about gratitude. So don't be greedy, be content. And focus on what you've been given. And also, you know another thing that the Bible says is the opposite of greed? Trust. Proverbs 28:25, fascinating verse. So the greedy man stirs up dissension. But he who trusts in the Lord will prosper. The opposite of a greedy man is someone who trusts in the Lord. Greed is a failure to trust in the goodness of God. You know, God is kind. He's proven that He's kind. He's demonstrated that again and again in your life. There's ample evidence that God is kind. And if you are greedy, you're refusing to believe that. You're saying, I have to grab as much as I possibly can, and I have to generate my own happiness, because God won't provide it. I have to get my hand on more than I need now, because God will never take care of me in the future. And it goes for anything, not just money. It's the same thing with the sin of overindulging in anything. Same thing with gluttony. Basically, that's saying I have to eat the whole dozen donuts now, because if I don't eat them, my kids will get their hands on them, I won't get any more. You know, God's not going to provide me with anything good tomorrow unless I have these donuts, so I'll just eat them all now. And it's wrong, and it's not only wrong, but it's foolish. You know, it comes to decision making, it's just poor decision making. Because greed doesn't work. Proverbs 23:4 says, do not wear yourself out to get rich. have the wisdom to show restraint. Cast but a glance at riches, and they'll be gone, for they will surely sprout wings and fly up the sky like an eagle. When you make it your goal to get rich, that will cause you to make decisions in life that will tend to bring you to poverty. If you make it your goal to get rich, that will cause you to make decisions in life that will tend to lead to poverty. So don't make that your goal. So the first attitude, you don't be greedy, right? Instead be content. Secondly, don't be stingy. Instead be generous. That's the other thing Proverbs says about your attitude. Stinginess doesn't work either. Proverbs 28:22, a stingy man is eager to get rich and is unaware that poverty awaits him. Hoarding your money is also a ticket to poverty. Proverbs 21:26, the righteous give without sparing. Proverbs 22:9, a generous man will himself be blessed, for he shares his food with the poor. Proverbs 11:24 says, one man gives freely, yet gains even more. Another withholds unduly, but comes to poverty. A generous man will prosper. He who refreshes others will himself be refreshed. So far, I haven't told you anything new. I realize that. I mean, you all came in here this morning. You all already knew that you shouldn't be greedy or stingy. Instead, you should be content and generous. So that's really nothing new. That's kind of basic. But those things are attitudes. And how do you change an attitude? You say, okay, I don't want to be greedy, but I am. What do I do about it? I mean, how can I make myself change my attitude towards money? The answer to that begins with understanding the value of money. Remember what we said before about the value of Proverbs? Proverbs teaches us what things are more important and less important than other things, and we can set our priorities. And when you have your priorities set in your mind, your subconscious mind will automatically make correct decisions in life based on your priorities. Remember the illustration of saving your child who runs out in the street? It's not a difficult decision because that's such a high priority. It's just an instantaneous decision you make without even thinking it through. All the decisions in life will become easier and easier when you have the priorities of Proverbs set in your mind, set in your thinking. That's why we should continually study Proverbs. And what Proverbs does is it teaches us how valuable money is, which is crucial. I mean, this is one of the most important messages in the whole series because there are so many decisions in life that involve determining the value of money in relationship to something else. Every purchase you ever make is a decision that the thing you're buying is more valuable than the money you're giving to it, right? Everything you ever sell, the money is more valuable than the thing you're giving away. Whenever you take a job, you make a decision. The wages, what are the wages worth in comparison with the hours and the working conditions and all that? A vacation, is it worth the money that it costs? Giving, when you decide to give, this money has certain value. If I give it, that has value. Which has more value? Investments. I mean, it's just so many decisions in life. And so we have to look at what Proverbs says about the value of money. How valuable is money, really? The answer is right here. Money is very valuable. How's that? You know, usually you hear warnings from the pulpit about overvaluing money. Don't overvalue money. And you'll hear that too. And the fact is, that's point number two. But for now, we're saying don't undervalue money. It's foolish to overvalue money. But it's also foolish to undervalue money. Because money is very valuable. You need money. You need money to eat. You need money to live. And if you don't earn money, you have to live off someone else's money. We're in a situation where we need money. It's not biblical to go off like a monk somewhere and not generate any income or contribute anything. Money is valuable. It's valuable not only for a living, but there's a lot of troubles in life that money can rescue you from, protect you from. Proverbs 10:15 says, the wealth of the rich is their fortified city, but the poverty is the ruin of the poor. It'll protect you, just like living in a fortified, protected city. For one thing, it can protect you against injustice. Proverbs 13:23, a poor man's field may produce abundant food, but injustice sweeps it away. You know, you can have a great year financially, but if you're a poor person, that can be all taken away from you because of injustice. You know, you can't afford a good lawyer or something. Money can protect you from being shunned, chapter 19. Money can influence people. A whole bunch of verses about how money influences people. That's very valuable in life. Wealth brings many friends, but a poor man's friend deserts him. Proverbs 19. It'll bring you into the favor of many people, Proverbs 14. Money can calm people's anger down, which is very valuable. It tends to place you in a position of authority, chapter 22, verse 7. So don't underestimate the value of money. It's crucial. It's a very important aspect of life on earth. Yes, it's temporary. Yes, someday it will burn up with everything else. No, you can't take it with you in the casket. But for now, it's a major player in the situation where we're living. Money is very powerful, and especially in the hands of the wise. Proverbs 14:24 says, "The wealth of the wise is their crown." But it's also powerful in the hands of the fool, because if you misuse money, it can create great suffering. Proverbs 11:15 says, "He puts up security for another will surely suffer." Money is kind of like a loaded gun. Powerful one way or the other. In the hands of a trained police officer in the midst of a dangerous crime, it can be used to save a person's life. A loaded gun in the hands of a fool can cause great tragedy. Money is the same way. It's very, very valuable. However, its value is limited. It's not as valuable as people make it out to be. It's valuable in those categories I just said, but it's not valuable in other categories. It can protect you, but it can't absolutely protect you, and you shouldn't look to it for protection. Proverbs 18:11 says, "The wealth of the rich is their fortified city. They imagine it an unscalable wall. They think they're so fortified that it's impenetrable." That's not true. There's no amount of money in the world that can protect you from disaster. The false security gives you false security. Proverbs 11:28 says, "He who trusts in his riches will fall." So never trust in that. Don't ever have money and wealth as a source of your security. That is idolatry, because that's giving to money something that belongs to God. And brace yourself if you ever do that, because God will have to teach you that that's the wrong source of security. Money has no effect on a person's value. That's one way where it's commonly overvalued. People think that it makes you more important. It doesn't, chapter 22, verse 2. It doesn't have any bearing on intelligence, whether you're wealthy or poor. That's chapter 28, verse 11. Money is not as important as peaceful relationships. Now here we're getting into the priority. What's more important than money? What's less important than money? Money is very important, but it's not as important as peaceful relationships. Proverbs 15:16. Better a little with the fear of the Lord than great wealth with turmoil. Or Proverbs 17:1. Better, I love this one. This was written by a parent of small children, I think. Or translated by one. Proverbs 17:1. Better a dry crust with peace and quiet than a house full of feasting with strife. I just imagine a mother of a little toddler or something just sitting at home. All the kids are finally out of the house, peace and quiet, nothing to eat but a dried up piece of peanut butter sandwich you got left over 4 hours ago, and they're just in heaven. Oh, peace and quiet. This is so nice. Because that's more important than money. Keep that in mind, by the way, next time you're in fight with your spouse about money or about a purchase. Taking the right path through life is dependent upon you making wise decisions. And you will make wise decisions when your priorities are set right. And one priority that needs to be drilled into the frontal lobe of your brain for your decision making is that money is more important, or less important than peaceful relationships. So if it costs you some money to maintain peace in a relationship, it's worth it. Peaceful relationships will bring you more benefits in life than money will. Money will bring you a lot, but not as many as peaceful relationships. Money is not as important as righteousness. Chapter 16, verse 8. It's not as important as justice, chapter 17. It's not as important as godly speech, chapter 19. It's not as important as wisdom and understanding, chapter 16. It's not as important as truthfulness, chapter 19. It's not as important as humility. It's not as important as a good name. Any decision you have to make, that you have to decide between your reputation and money, your reputation is more valuable. Chapter 11, verse 16, it's not as important as respect. If you have to choose between getting someone's money or getting their respect, better to get the respect. That's more valuable. Money is not as important. Money is easier to come by, but not as important as a prudent wife. Chapter 19, verse 14. Prudent wife is worth more money. You say, "I've got a prudent wife, and she costs me thousands." Well, fine. You're still getting a good deal because she's worth more than the money. Not only are there limits to the value of money, but there's actually drawbacks to wealth. There are some negatives to it. It can drive you to commit wrong things. Chapter 28, verse 21, chapter 30. Money can make you a target. Chapter 13, verse 8 says, "A man's riches may ransom his life, but a poor man hears no threat." You know, if you're dirt poor, people leave you alone. They're not suing you all over the place. They're not asking you for money all the time. They're not asking for favors all the time. You know, you just leave you alone. But if you're rich, you're a target for people. wealth tends to make people proud, which is the biggest enemy of the Christian, pride. That's the worst, that's the root of all sin. And Proverbs 18:23 says, a poor man pleads for mercy, but a rich man answers harshly. It tends to make you proud when you're rich. So it's important to understand the value of money, the value of money, and the limitations of money, and the drawbacks of money. Turn to Proverbs 11:16. Somebody said, money, I read this one quote, says, money can get you anywhere but heaven, and it can buy you anything but happiness. And then I read another quote, somebody says, all I ask is a chance to prove that money can't make me happy. Now that's what some people think. I hear that all the time, I'd like to prove it. Well, Proverbs 11:16, a kind-hearted woman gains respect, but ruthless men gain only wealth. Now, that is fascinating. Notice that phrase, only wealth. That's a curse. Wealth is wonderful. Wealth is a good thing. Only wealth is a curse from God. If you ever get to the point in your life where you have only wealth, and your life has come to a disastrous, catastrophic point. History is littered with people who have committed suicide because they got to the point where they had only wealth. A horrible end. So, that's the attitude towards money. Now, what about your actions? How do you get money? One person said, in my case, the buck stopped before it ever got here. Now, how do you get it? How do you get your hands on it? That's a question. And this is a crucial question because, now listen to this. The method you use for acquiring money determines what kind of money you get. So there's two different kinds of money. There's valuable money, and there's other money that's worthless. The one kind is valuable, the other kind is worthless. There are some dollar bills that are worth more than other dollar bills. Dollar bills are like stocks. Some of them are worth a lot, some of them are worthless. The good kind brings life. Bad kind brings punishment. The good kind results in wealth, according to Proverbs. The bad kind has trouble added to it. The good kind will still be around when you're old and your kids will get it. The bad kind will end up in the hands of a stranger. The good kind the bad kind brings trouble into your house. It cuts your life short. It will dwindle away. But the good kind multiplies. Now think about that. Think about how important it is, not just to get money, but to get the good kind of money. Warning. You need to get the good kind, not the bad kind, because the bad kind dwindles away. What good is that? If you don't want money that dwindles away, it's worthless. The good kind multiplies. It's better to have $10 that will multiply up to $1,000 than to have $10,000 that will dwindle down to 10, right? So you don't want to have any of those bad dollars. They have punishment added to them, they have trouble added to them, they have loss. You'd be crazy to not want the good kind of those. So, what determines what kind you get? What makes money either bad money or good money? Well, three things determine whether or not you get bad money. Number one, your method of acquiring it. Your method of getting it. Proverbs 10:2 says, ill-gotten treasures are of no value. I think this is fascinating stuff. Ill-gotten treasures are of no value. The word ill-gotten means something gained through greed or some other wrong means. And other wrong means, it includes greed, it includes fraud, chapter 20, verse 17, lying, stealing, oppressing the poor, giving gifts to the rich, interesting, and exorbitant interest. You gain money through any of those things, fraud, giving gifts to the rich, oppressing the poor, stealing, lying, or exorbitant interest, and it's bad money. You say, money's money! Dollar bill's a dollar bill! What does it matter how you get it? Doesn't $1 bill have the same purchasing power as another one? No. No, getting the bad kind of money is like getting money with, did you hear about that bank robbery recently? Last week, I think? This guy robbed a bank and the ink exploded all over him and all over the money. That money's worthless. They can't use it. It's got that red ink splattered all over it. Everyone knows it's stolen. That's what bad money's like. It's worthless. It turns bad. Proverbs 20:17 says, food gained by fraud tastes sweet to the man, but he ends up with a mouthful of gravel. It goes bad on him. Proverbs 21:6 says, a fortune made by a lying tongue is a fleeting vapor and a deadly snare. It's fleeting. Bad money is fleeting. One person once said, if money could talk, it would say goodbye. Now, that's what it seems to do. And that's true of the bad kind. But it's not true of the good kind. The good kind multiplies, stays around. You gain money by oppressing the poor, that'll bring poverty. You grow an interest, it'll be lost. Proverbs 10:22 says, the blessing of the Lord brings wealth, and he adds no trouble to it. Now that's a good thing. No trouble added. Proverbs 15:6 says, the house of the righteous contains great treasure, but the income of the wicked brings them trouble. That's the bad kind. The kind that brings you trouble. Have you ever tempted to gain something through questionable means? Through, ripping someone off, maybe not telling them about the problem with the car you're selling them, or leading them a little bit, fudging a little bit on the truth in some kind of a deal or whatever. Stealing something, taking something that doesn't belong to you. Anytime you're tempted to do that, just ask yourself, what good will this money do me? It'll be the bad kind. It's not valuable for anything. Let me illustrate this way. Suppose you got two guys that need a refrigerator. And first guy, he goes out and he works and he does honest labor and he earns $100. The refrigerator costs $500. This guy has $100. He goes refrigerator shopping. He stops and gets his mail on the way. There's an unexpected check from the insurance company. Refund is $200. Big surprise. He goes there. He finds an amazing deal. It's a scratch and dent or something. This great refrigerator is on sale for $75. Just happens to come across the deal. He buys it. He comes home and puts it in his house. He has this terrific refrigerator. He's got $225 to put in the bank, and the thing, for years and years, works just fine. Another guy swindles someone out of $1,000. Now he's got bad money. He's got $1,000, it's a bad thing. He goes shopping for a refrigerator. He has to pay full retail price, $500. He stops and gets his mail, an unexpected bill that he didn't know about, for $2,500. Now he's in the hole. He puts the refrigerator in his house, it works until one day after the warranty and then breaks down. You see, we tend to try and evaluate where we are, what our financial status is by how much money you have. But your financial status isn't determined by how much money you have. Yes. Your financial status is determined by how much money you have in comparison with your expenses, right? And guess who's in charge of those? God. I mean, if you have $100 and only $50 in expenses, that's better than having $10,000 and $20,000 in expenses, right? God can keep that, dishwasher running, or he can let it break down. So, you tell me, which is more valuable? In that story with the refrigerator, what's more valuable? The $100 or the $1,000? $100 is far more valuable. Remember when you were in elementary school? Does that thing come up yet? Remember when you were doing the elementary math? Greater than and less than? In this case, $100 with God's blessing is greater than $1,000 with trouble added. And value, isn't it? You understand that? Different kind of money. So, the number one thing that determines whether or not you get the good kind or the bad kind is your method of getting it. Another thing is your character. Your character determines the value of your wages. Do you know that righteous people get paid a different kind of money than wicked people get paid? True. Proverbs 11:18. The wicked man earns deceptive wages. That's the bad kind. But he who sows righteousness reaps a sure reward. That's the good kind. Proverbs 10:16, the same idea. The wages of the righteous, that's the good kind, bring them life. But the income of the wicked brings them punishment. So a righteous man's paycheck for $1,000 is greater than a wicked man's paycheck for $1,000. Different kind of money. So, what determines whether you get the good kind or the bad kind? Your method of getting it, your character, and number three, wisdom. The wiser you are, the more useful your money will be. Proverbs 17:16. Of what use is money in the hands of a fool? He has no desire to get wisdom. It's worthless. You put money in the hands of a fool, you will get himself in trouble. It won't do him any good at all. You need wisdom in order to make good use of money. So, back to our question. How do you get it? How do you get money? Well, here's how you get money. Now, listen carefully to this, because you're not going to hear very many sermons in this pulpit about how to get money. It doesn't come up. But here it is in Proverbs, so here we go. How do you get money? You want money? You want good money? Good, valuable money, the good kind? 5 easy steps to getting money. Here you go. Number 1. Pursue righteousness and love. Proverbs 21:21. He who pursues righteousness and love finds life, prosperity, and honor. And prosperity? Pursue righteousness and love. Chapter 10, verse 3 says the same thing. 13:21. Number 2. Pursue humility in the fear of the Lord. Chapter 22, verse 4. Number 3. Be faithful, and you will be richly blessed. Proverbs 28:20. Number 4. Work hard. Here's a good one. Proverbs 21. Actually, there's so many verses in Proverbs that talk about hard work. It's amazing. But that's the way to get wealth. Proverbs 12:11. He who works his land will have abundant food. But he who chases fantasy lacks judgment. Don't try to get money from chasing fantasy. Just work hard. Shortcuts to wealth generally result in poverty. And don't fall in love with pleasure either. Proverbs 21:17. He who loves pleasure will become poor. Whoever loves wine and oil will never be rich. Don't fall in love with pleasure. So work hard. Be diligent. So, you pursue love and righteousness. You pursue humility and fear of the Lord. Be faithful. You work hard. And then you gain wealth, number 5, a little at a time. That's the rule in Proverbs. Proverbs 13:11. He who gathers money little by little makes it grow. So watch out for get-rich-quick schemes. Watch out for get-rich-slow schemes, too. You know, go for any scheme. Say, I don't know if it's a scheme. Well, ask yourself, does this involve doing some work and getting a fair price for my work? If it doesn't, it's probably a scheme. Frank Hubbard said, the safest way to double your money is to fold it over once and put it back in your pocket. True. Proverbs 20:21 says an inheritance quickly gained at the beginning will not be blessed to you. Isn't that interesting? Money that comes suddenly tends not to be as useful as money that, that you build up over time. You do a study of celebrities who suddenly get rich, or sports stars who are just poor in college and then all of a sudden they're millionaires the very next year. Or, you know, athletes, you look at athletes after they retire, very, very often they come to poverty. They lose it all. Movie stars, people who come into inheritances, lottery winners, if you do a study of lottery winners, more often than not, ruins their lives. Ruins them. And the ones that it doesn't ruin their life are usually ones that just behave as though they didn't even win. They just kind of ignore the money. Money that comes suddenly, in fact, Tracy was telling me about the counselor that she heard about whose job was just, all she does is counsel people who come into sudden large inheritances. Seems like an interesting counseling job. You charge a lot of money. But anyway, that was her job, and she said that caused tremendous trouble for kids or whatever to get huge inheritances all of a sudden. Caused chaos in their lives. Well, anyway, some people say, well, I could just win the lottery. I'd still live the same way I live now. Is that your goal? Is that what you want? To live the way you're living now? Guess what? I got great news. You are. You can. You're already living the way you're living now. You need to win the lottery for that. Well, anyway, make careful plans is another principle. Proverbs 21:5. Don't act in haste. The plans of the diligent lead to profit, as surely as haste leads to poverty. Make plans. Think it through. Take a reasoned, wise approach to building wealth. So, those are the 5 steps to getting wealth. So now you know how to get money. And the good kind, too. So now you got the good money in your hand. What do you do with it? Once you gain all this money, and it's a good kind of money, what do you do with the money? What does Proverbs tell us on that? Well, once you get it, just think about your first thought, your first reaction when you get money. I mean, suppose you're at work and you get a bonus out of the blue. You don't expect it. The boss hands you a huge bonus check. You're like, wow, I didn't know I was going to get this. Now I can... What? You fill in the blank. What do you think of? You get a sudden huge bonus check, and first thing you think of, now I can what? You're thinking, you look at me like, I wouldn't know. Never gotten one like that. But just imagine. Well, number one, what should you do with money? What is the purpose of money? Proverbs 3:9. Honor the Lord with your wealth. Honor the Lord with your wealth. With the first fruits of all your crops. Then your barns will be filled to overflowing, and your vats will brim over with new wine. I got this money. Now I can honor the Lord with it. That's the first reaction. First reaction. You say, how do you honor the Lord? Well, the term honor here is associated with giving, and this is a reference to the tithe. The tithe in the Old Testament was an expression of worship. It was an Old Testament pattern for worshiping God through giving. The New Testament counterpart to that is free will offering. There's a whole lot of principles. One of these days I'll preach on that. Bible talks about it being a percentage of your income, whatever percentage you want, and then the use for it, primarily to support the pastors and widows in the church and so on. Anyway, there's a whole lot of principles, but for now, what this verse talks about, what this verse zeroes in on, is this. It's the first fruit. And that's an important thing. It's the first fruit. Now, when they would do it, a farmer would get, they would get some initial crop, and that's the most valuable, because once you get it in, the rest, you might lose the rest. You get a hailstorm or some kind of storm, you could lose it. So that first fruit is in the barn. You got it. That's important. Most important kind of your money. That's the kind that you can use to honor the Lord. I think this is an interesting principle. God wants the first fruit. You know, you go through those five steps, you amass this money, you get paid honest wages and all this stuff. Now you've got all this money in your hands, and it's all good money. None of it's bad money. It's all good money. Now what do you do with it? Well, that good money is divided itself into two categories. There's the first fruit and the rest. Now listen. The only money that you have that's useful for honoring the Lord, in this sense, is the first fruit. The first fruit. You give to the Lord first. You don't say, I'm going to do all that I want to do, I'm going to buy all that I want to buy, and then whatever's left over, I'll see if I have something left over for God. God does not want your leftovers. He will not accept them as worship. So, you gain something, you gain anything, and the first part of it goes to God. That's a demonstration of your faith, a demonstration of priority. You say, I can't give, I can't afford to give anything. I can only afford to give a penny. Give a penny. You know, I think my daughter is the only person in this whole congregation that ever gives pennies in the offering box. But apparently the rest of us can afford more than that. But listen, some people say, I don't give anything because I can't afford it. You can't afford a penny. My daughter could lend you a penny. She could give you a penny. Listen, you can afford a penny. You say, that's not going to help. Huh? Hey, that's a good kind of money. It'll expand. It'll grow. That'll grow that. I can think of a widow somewhere that gave a penny, and it was a pretty good deal. God honored that. The issue isn't how much you need. God isn't short on money. The issue is honoring God with your wealth. That's an important aspect of worship. And another way to honor God with your money is to give it to poor people. Proverbs 14:31 says, you give to the poor and you'll be rewarded. In fact, Proverbs 19 says, he who is kind to the poor lends to the Lord. You give money to the poor as a gift. God considers that a loan, as if he owes you that back with interest. He doesn't owe you anything, but he considers it that way. He who gives to the poor, Proverbs 8:28-27, will lack nothing. But he who closes his eyes to them will receive many curses. So, what will you do with the money now that you got the money? Number one, you honor God with it. First thing. Number two, what else do you do with it? You be generous with it. Be generous. Proverbs 21:26, the righteous give without sparing. Now we already talked about this, all these verses. Don't go through them. Just be generous in general with your money. That'll make your money worth more. Number three, don't squander it. You know, being generous does not mean throwing your money away just everywhere. That's just being foolish. That's not generosity. It's foolishness. Proverbs 17:18 says, a man lacking in judgment strikes hands in pledge and puts up security for his neighbor. You know, there are certain times when it's not wise to give your money away. In fact, Proverbs 20:15 says, take the garment of one who puts up security for a stranger, hold it in pledge if he does it for a wayward woman. A stranger, a wayward woman, a foolish person. Listen, don't give handouts to certain people. There's certain people that it's foolish to give them something because, you know, you got somebody say who refuses to work and would rather just panhandle or something like that. You do that person more harm than good by giving them anything. Don't give them anything. That's foolish. We're to be good stewards of our money. And it's both wrong and foolish to squander it. And the biggest way to squander money is sinful habits. Proverbs 29:3 says a companion of prostitutes squanders his wealth. Sin will devour wealth. It will devour it. Another way to squander it is to be overindulgent in your lifestyle. A whole lot of Proverbs about that. Proverbs 23:20 says, do not join with those who drink too much wine or gorge themselves on meat. For drunkards and gluttons become poor, and drowsiness clothes them in rags. First of all, you have to spend all the money on the food and wine to begin with. Then you eat it, and you're a sluggard, and then you can't work, and you just end up poor. So don't fall in love with overindulgence. Number four, manage your money well. Manage it well. That's your responsibility. You're to be a steward of it. Proverbs 27:23. This is an interesting proverb. It says, be sure you know the condition of your flock. Give careful attention to your herds. For riches do not endure forever, and a crown is not secure for all generations. When hay is removed from the new growth, new growth appears in the grass from the hills gathered in, and the lambs will provide you with clothing, and the goats with the price of the field. You will have plenty of goat's milk to feed your family and nourish your servant girls. That's a fascinating thing. You should study that sometime. Give careful attention to the value of your estate. Think it through. Catalog it, figure it out, take steps, make investments. All that is in here. Because riches don't endure forever. You just can't leave it the way it is. It takes management. Have a budget. Develop a budget. I read somewhere it says a budget is a method for going broke methodically. Which, that's not true. A budget is actually very helpful. You'd be amazed how important it is in fact. I've counseled people that have had financial struggles, put them on a simple budget where all they do is keep track of what they're spending, and they go from literally needing $500 to $1,000 a month less to live on. Believe it or not. It's amazing how much, it's the more money you have, the more time and energy it takes to manage it. That's another drawback of wealth. Very big job to manage a lot of money. But you need to have a budget because sometimes you get into trouble because you're overspending in this category and you're trying to cut your spending. You're saying, man, we're going in the hole. We're going into debt. We need to cut our spending. And you're trying to cut your spending over in this category. You need to know which area you're overspending in and so on. So have a budget. And then number five, save. Save some money. Saving is not the same as hoarding. Hoarding is wrong. Saving is biblical. Proverbs 21:20 says, in the house of the wise are stores of choice food and oil. But a foolish man devours all that he has. Don't devour all that you have right now. Save some up for the future. You need to be able to retire. You don't need to be able to retire early. But you do need to be able to retire at some point. Otherwise, you're going to be dependent on someone else. So save some money. Invest it. Be wise with it. Set up. See what I do in my bank? I have columns all set up, and I get a paycheck, and I put $43 in the groceries, and $26 in the eating out, and $18 in the gas, and this bill, and all my insurance, and I got columns all the way across the page, and I just put this little bit. I got it all divided up into all these columns, and I got a column for barred purchases, and a miscellaneous column, a vacation column, and a personal column for me, and Tracy's got one. So on, and then you spend and you take the money out of the column. Column gets down to zero, you can't spend any more in that category. Live on a budget. Save some up. That way, I get the car insurance bill, only comes once every 6 months, comes out of the blue, I forgot about it. It's, whatever, $600. I look in the column, there's $600. Already there. So, be wise with your money.